Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to today's episode of ModPath Chat. Joining me today are two distinguished guests, Dr. Harris and Dr. Argyris. Dr. Harris is a Howard Hughes investigator and a professor of biochemistry, molecular biology, and biophysics at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Argyris is a brilliant oral pathologist. He's currently a postdoctoral fellow at Dr. Harris' lab. They are here today to discuss the recent publication in Modern Pathology. The study addressed the role of ApoBec C3b in head and neck squamous cell carcinoma. We could have not found a more capable source to inform us on ApoBec than Dr. Harris, who is an authority on the topic and had helped discover multiple members of this important DNA cytosine deaminase. Thank you both for accepting our invitation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to have you both. So we'll start. I mean, this is clearly not, it's a tongue twister, even for I, with my interest in bladder cancer, I became very intrigued and fascinated by this group of deaminases, and would like, if I may, ask Dr. Harris just to give us a little bit of a quick, 2 minute, why is this enzyme, what's the role, and who's this?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the ApoBec enzymes, one can pronounce it ApoBec or ApoBec, kind of like tomato, tomato. It stands for apolipoprotein B mRNA editing catalytic subunit 1. And these are ApoBec 3 subfamily members. And the particular family member that's the star of our manuscript is called ApoBec 3B. And they're not isoforms of the same gene. They're actually all distinct genes. So there's seven different ApoBec 3s in humans. And our working model for how these enzymes function in biology is they provide an overlapping role, overlapping roles in innate immunity to different viruses. Essentially, any DNA virus or retrovirus is susceptible to deamination by these enzymes. So a few years ago, my group and the International Sequencing Consortia independently discovered the ApoBec enzymes in cancer. And we had long ago hypothesized that these active DNA deaminases in our cells would have a role in cancer mutagenesis. But testing it was actually not trivial given the large family and the many, many different cancer types. Mm-hmm. And so we had originally chosen breast cancer and then expanded to other cancer types, including HPV positive tumor types, bladder, cervical, and head and neck. The results were, and still are, beyond our wildest imagination in that the ApoBec mutation process, and I'll define it in a second, is second only to the aging process in overall numbers of mutation in cancer. And in some cancers like bladder, head, neck, breast, lung, cervical, and subsets of other cancers, the ApoBec process is actually the dominant mutation process, as you said, for bladder cancer. And so we define the APABEC mutation process based on its the intrinsic preference of the enzyme for cytosine nucleobases preceded by a T and followed by an ART. So these trinucleotide motifs, TCA or TCT, when mutated to T or G, define the APABEC mutation signature. So C to T, C to G, and TCA and TCT.
Regardless of where, what the gene impacted, as long as you have that
motif. Yeah, regardless of function, it's simply a signature, like your signature, my signature, and we can extract that from sequencing data sets with informatics.
And it's fair to say, so this is like an innate antiviral defense mechanism that get hijacked, or it's happening in cancer. Is that fair?
Exactly. So that's the mystery. So there are clearly some virus positive cancer types like HPV positive head and neck that we use in our study as a positive control, where the APABEC3B enzyme is upregulated by the virus. And our working model there is that the virus is doing that on purpose, using its oncoproteins to facilitate its own evolution. Mm. And then the byproduct of that is all of the damage that happens simultaneously to the genome. So APABEC or HPV positive APABEC hot cancers are among the heaviest APABEC signature cancers across, you know, all human cancer types. So that started out as a positive control in our study to ask, how is APABEC, when is APABEC turned on in HPV negative cancers, which a subset of can also elicit or show a strong APABEC mutation signature.
And we'll get to that in a second. But I mean, so the TCGA is where a lot of that signature in bladder cancer. And for the longest time, we think of bladder cancer, melanoma, lung cancer as, you know, environmentally induced cancer. So the culprit there is smoking, UV light, and what have you. So how does that fit within that? Now it's known that APABEC is the highest frequently signature in bladder cancer. What's your view?
So it doesn't detract from other sources. So if you look at the overall constellation of mutation in cancer, there's exogenous sources and endogenous sources. And the APABEC is clearly an endogenous source, but in some cases it's induced by, you know, exogenous infection, also inflammation caused by infection. So there's different ways to turn on the APABEC mutation process. And viruses obviously flip the switch. But there's virus-independent ways, too, like we're seeing in HPV-negative head and neck cancer.
Which brings us to today's study. So I guess the first question is, why was it done? It seems like because it's wanted to see what's in non-HPV. Is that the correct answer?
Correct. That's true. And like Ruben very nicely said, when I joined the lab, starting my postdoc, there was a substantial body of data suggesting or showing that APABEC3B mRNA expression is significantly increased in the HPV-driven head and neck tumors. And this particular type of neoplasm is characterized by a plethora of HPV-related mutations. But we had no idea up to this point what is happening in the HPV negative dysplasias and head and neck cancers. So both Ruben and I were very, very interested in having an answer to that question. And so we decided to investigate the A3B protein levels in different groups, I should say, of head and neck lesions using an IHC-based approach and our custom monoclonal anti-A3B antibody.
So I'm glad you mentioned that. So two magical things had to happen for this study to occur, actually. One was the development of a really great monoclonal that's showcased in the paper. And the other was Dr. Agiris joining my group because, you know, I'm not going to claim for a second that I'm a pathologist. So actually having a pathologist in a molecular lab is kind of the magic recipe for doing the work that we did.
That's awesome. Yeah, the images for the IHC, I would refer the audience, are very crisp and amazing. So I guess so that kind of touch on the design a little bit, Procopius. So what was your controls and how you compared and what exactly? So you mentioned the immunotype, but what else?
Right. So our positive control was a group of HPV driven otopharyngeal cancers. So we were anticipating that we would see significantly high and sort of like uniformly diffuse positivity in regard to A3B protein in these tumors. But we also included HPV-related oral epithelial dysplasias from the oral cavity. So these were our two positive control groups. And then we had four additional groups of non-HPV related lesions. So we had low-grade oral epithelial dysplasias, high-grade dysplasias, and finally HPV negative oral squamous cell carcinomas. And our what we anticipated to be negative control was a group of just epithelial hyperplasias without any dysplastic features, any atypia, and adjacent to the tumor's normal epithelial tissues.
Yeah. So that one I want to emphasize is super important because APABEC3B is never upregulated in a normal tissue, including oral epithelial tissue. And so uniformly negative. So when you see it light up in, as Procopius will tell us, it's definitely on its way to becoming a tumor or already a tumor.
So this never is important. Sounds a little.
It's very important.
It's never.
I wanted to emphasize that. Yeah,
you're giving me some ideas for future research, Vlad, because that's always the dilemma: is this CIS or dysplasia in the bladder, which is a very elusive the dysplasia part, diagnostically very hard. Right. All right. So what we're let's move on to the findings and how can we translate that? You suggest. Just some great ideas on the utility of these markers. So
I can talk about our findings. I think Ruben and I were both very, very excited to see that. First of all the HPV positive lesions, including dysplasias and oropharyngeal squamous cell carcinomas, consistently showed really high A3B protein levels. And this is consistent with a mechanism in which the virus causes immediate and prolonged A3B overexpression, regardless of the type of diagnosis, whether it's dysplasia or cancer. It doesn't make a difference as long as it's HPV, high-risk HPV related.
And that's due to the E6, E7, triggered by E6, E7. All right.
Correct. But then we also noticed that the HPV negative oral squamous cell carcinomas demonstrated similarly high A3B protein levels. So that was telling us that, okay, there is perhaps another mechanism or an overlapping mechanism that can trigger A3B upregulation in this histotype. And finally, something that was pretty interesting, I have to say, is that A3B expression could discern between low-grade and high-grade dysplasias, with the last group showing similarly high levels as the invasive squamous cell carcinomas. Hmm. That probably suggests that in the absence of HPV infection, the upregulation of A3B happens in a gradual multi-step process.
Yeah, at least two-step. And that actually helped distinguish between, an on-off switch, like we see with HPV, high-risk HPV infection versus a gradual model. which I think is important for future mechanistic studies.
And for from a translational point of view, I mean, we're going to have a cutoff because that I guess it's helpful if as long as you, I mean, that's why when you said normal doesn't have it, so having it should at least make us think this is at least low-grade dysplasia, which is a very difficult diagnosis, at least for people like me who are not oral pathologists. But how about like moving from low to high? Is there a cutoff when you start or is this just gradual? Not yet there.
Maybe comment, Procopius.
So it is. This is the toughest answer, the toughest question to answer. And indeed, our goal in the long term is to be able to use A3B as a predictive biomarker to be able to identify either the low or high grade dysplasias that will transform into cancer. It's really hard to tell right now what is, for example, the IHC score of a dysplasia that is going to, what is the IHC score threshold above which we should call it high grade dysplasia. We are not there yet, but I think it's very clear that if we look at a group of low-grade and high-grade dysplasias, we can see a clear separation in regard to the mean expression of A3B protein levels.
But on a case-to-case basis still.
Yeah, and there's enough variance that it is tricky. There's overlap between the groups, but I think once it's on and above a certain level, you know, I think that would be the key for whoever the physician is that's seeing that particular case to have a very close look.
And you mentioned Ki-67, so coupling it may also help there, you think, or using Ki-67 in addition to A3B?
We think that it's the cellular proliferation that may play a role in upregulation of A3B. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't use Ki-67 as a co-stain and predictive marker along with A3B. It's probably a way to for us to identify mechanisms that may upregulate A3B outside of the context of an HPV viral infection.
But I think also from a general perspective, if you are co-staining, there is a direct correlation between, you know, as we reported, between high A3B levels and Ki-67 levels. And if you're up on that axis beyond a level which we haven't, you know, defined, I think that, you know, we need to define more rigorously, it's positive, no right. question about it, right? Absolutely. So I think it's informative to look at both, and where the threshold is for cutoff is not clear yet.
So that sounds very promising and hopefully trigger more interest in more studies in this, because it's such a difficult topic. Well, this has been very enjoyable, and I thank you both for accepting the invitations. And this is the first week of the year, so Happy New Year to both of you, and wish you tremendous success, further success with your important research. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks very much for having us. This was a real treat.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year. It was great to discuss our work with you.
Thank you.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.
Imagine the the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.